This is the Airplane Geeks Podcast. Our aim is to educate and inform you, explore and expand your passion for aviation, and entertain you a little along the way. This episode, we talk with one of the original aviation podcasters, flight attendant Betty from Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. She's a real hoot, and we have a fun conversation. In the news, we look at airline seating, airline fees, pay for flight attendants, and a new indigenous fighter jet from Iran, or is it? We also have an Across the Pond segment on the Light Aircraft Association and their role supporting general aviation in the UK. All that and more coming up right now. Welcome to the Airplane Geeks Podcast. This is episode 518 of the show where we talk aviation. I'm Max Flight, and joining me is first David Vanderhoof. He's our Airplane Geeks historian. Hi, David.
You almost forgot what I did for a living, huh?
There was a little pause there, I know.
Hi, everyone. Looking forward to a good show.
Also with us is the other Max, Max Trescott. He's host of Aviation News Talk podcast. He was the 2008 CFI of the year, and he knows everything and a little bit more about the Cirrus aircraft. Hey, Max.
Max, is that you? I think I can see you now. The smoke is clearing.
Yeah. Is the smoke clearing out there?
It's the clearest day I've seen in 4 weeks in Northern California. I'm really, really quite enthusiastic.
Beautiful. Also with us this episode is Brian Coleman. Yes, friends, he's back for this episode anyway. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Max. Glad to be here. And I absolutely had to make this episode as one of the guests that I've been stalking for the past, 3 years or so. I just had to come back for this conversation. So really looking forward to it.
And another must attend is our main man, Micah. How you doing, Micah?
I'm doing great. And hello, everyone. I am so excited for this show. And in terms of must attend, when I heard who our guest was going to be this week, I sent a note to Max and said, I've got to be on. Thank you.
That's right. Well, why don't we get right to it? Our guest this episode is Betty Theske. Now, Betty's a flight attendant with a major U.S. airline, and she produces the Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase podcast. That started in 2005, one of the original aviation podcasts. Of course, it's a collection of funny airline and travel stories, kind of like an old-fashioned radio show. Now, Betty tells us that as a child, when someone asked her what she wanted to do when she grew up, her answer was, "I want to travel," and that's just what she does. After earning her BA in communications with a minor in psychology, Betty hired on with People Express as a flight attendant. Later, she applied at one of the major airlines, and that's where she's been for more than 20 years. Her job as a flight attendant makes it easy for her to indulge in her passion for travel, and it's taken her all over the world. Of course, Betty in the Sky is a very popular podcast. It even spawned a book in 2010, Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase, Hilarious Stories of Air Travel by the World's Favorite Flight Attendant. Betty, it's a great pleasure to welcome you to the Airplane Geeks podcast.
Hello. You guys all made me feel so welcome. And I have to say, for the listener, that you guys did a little checklist earlier, which was very reminiscent of a pilot checklist.
Yes, it is. That's true. Before we start, we go through the checklist because we've screwed up so many times that you just make a list of all the things you don't do right, and that becomes a checklist.
And Betty, it's the only reason why they keep me around anymore.
Yeah, David manages our checklist. Well, Betty, as you know, we have a number of co-hosts and contributors to this podcast who are fans. And as Micah was illustrating, I almost had to fight them off because they wanted to be on the episode with you. Betty, what is it, do you think, that causes so many people to love what you do?
I have no idea. Honestly. I basically just talk into a microphone in my closet and I record people on the airplane. And I don't know. I think maybe it's just that people really start to feel like they know you if they listen to you for, years. Really, you do. Like, I actually have some sisters who listen to the podcast because they feel like they get to catch up with me.
Yeah, better than Facebook.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to have some great conversations with Betty coming up. First, we're going to jump right into some of the aviation news from the past week. Is everybody ready?
Ready.
Ready from the West.
All set in the Northeast.
Ready for my closet.
Our first story is U.S. Big Three Airlines consolidate business class changes slowly. And this comes from John Walton, writing in the Runway Girl Network. Now, you'd be hard-pressed to find someone who knows more about the passenger experience than John. And he reports that when American Airlines installs premium economy on its Boeing 787-8 Dreamliner aircraft, it will cut the number of business class seats from 28 down to 20. Now, these seats will be the Zodiac Aerospace Concept D product. It's a staggered forward backwards herringbone configuration. And they're not.
Boo.
Yeah, they won't be using the outward facing BE Aerospace Super Diamond seat. That's on other American 787s. Now, Brian, the. This aerospace or Zodiac Aerospace Concept D has not met with a whole lot of enthusiasm. But tell us about what's going on here.
Yeah, it's because I'm definitely not a fan of the forward and backward facing seats, even though everyone says that a backward facing seat is safer. I just think the orientation of sitting backwards and just how you're served, the way flight attendants can sneak up on you. I just find it phenomenally awkward. So there are, four major seat manufacturers. There's Thomson, Zodiac, Rockwell Collins, and Recaro, and there are others. And airlines really have a choice of seats. They have the herringbone style, which is where the passengers are, they're at a diagonal, but they're facing away from the window, so their feet towards the aisle. There's the reverse herringbone, where the it's just the reverse of that. There's a diamond configuration, which I'm actually a fan of. And that's where in the middle section, it's a normal herringbone on the outside, but on the middle section of seats, your head's on the outside and your feet towards the middle. So you kind of form this diamond shape if you're looking in the back going up. And then there are some straight seats, but they're staggered, where, let's say, if you're at the window, you could be right at the window facing forward. Then you could kind of be at the aisle, but it's offset. It's set backwards, or it's set back from that first seat. So the person next to the window actually has a space to get out. And there are really two styles of that. One that's in a sort of enclosed in walls and one without walls. So I had really had a question for Betty over these different seat configurations. Being a flight attendant, is there any difference or any preference over serving passengers in one versus the other? And do you enjoy sneaking up on passengers? And
oh, I do like sneaking up on passengers. Oh, I got to tell you just real quick, I have this new trick lately where they have these things on the plane so we can help clean the bathrooms. And I like to blow up the long glove like Howie Mandel. It's really long. And we just had some air marshals on the plane. And the one air marshal thought it was so funny that I had blown up this. Basically, it's a really long arm. So it's basically like an arm and a hand. And he saw it and he goes, oh, go all up there and sneak up to the other air marshal and poke him on the shoulder. So I did. You should have seen the look on his face when he sees this fake, you know, you aren't expecting a fake hand on the plane. But anyway, back to the seats. I don't have much of a preference. I do like to, when you have access to the aisle. But my actual personal selfish thought on this whole topic is I don't like that they're getting rid of seats in first class or business, whatever you want to call it, because I fly standby and the more seats, the better. I have been known to fly from the East Coast to Seattle to fly to Paris just to get up front. So the less seats is a problem for the standby traveler.
I know exactly what you're talking about. I completely agree with you because there's less upgrades as well for passengers.
That's what I mean. We don't want less seats up there. Oh, but the one thing, we do have those suites up there. And lately people keep getting stuck in them.
They get stuck in them.
Yeah, they can't get up. They can't get the door open to get out. It's always a different perspective, you know.
So then what about the premium economy that they seem to be adding as well? From a flight attendant perspective, is there a different type of passenger that typically sits in those seats? I know the service that you get tends to be a little bit upgraded from regular economy. So
right.
Being a flight attendant, do you enjoy working in that cabin or not?
Well, I have a lot of thoughts on that also. I always have a lot of thoughts on everything. But the reason why they're doing more of those type seats is most people can't afford like $8,000 to fly to Europe in first class, but they can afford an upgraded coach experience. So I think that's where the market is. But the problem with those people is that they really like to think that they're in first class just because they're in the, you know, the upgraded coach. So you'll have people say, but no, but I'm in, you know, because they want to use the first class lavatories and things like that. So yeah. It is a problem that there is some entitlement sometimes because they think that they're in first class, which they're not.
Betty, do you find people complaining about the seats or saying positive things, maybe especially in economy with the seats offering less and less space, it seems?
There's always complaints about that. But yeah. Well, there's complaints about everything. Just 2 days ago, I had somebody in first class talking about how I paid $8,000 for this seat, and I don't think that pilot should be able to use the restroom and because he had to wait for the pilot. And it's kind of like, well, I understand that you paid a lot of money, but the pilot still has to go to the bathroom.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the pilot should get preference. But
well, he didn't think so. He was going to write a letter. But yeah, people complain about the seats all the time. I travel all the time, and lots of times I'm in coach, and I don't think that the coach seats are too bad. You know, with a glass of wine and some movies, I'm actually pretty happy back there.
Well, one thing that's changing a little bit is fees. And we have an article from the Washington Post by Chris Elliott, "Do Airline Tickets Need Warning Labels?" And it's interesting, the Senate version of the FAA Reauthorization Act mandates that airlines disclose their baggage fees and cancellation fees, change fees, ticketing fees, and seat selection fees in a, quote, standardized format. And Chris Elliott asks, you know, why is it so hard to figure out what you'll have to pay for a plane ticket and what you're paying for? Micah, this is kind of an issue that comes up a lot, I think. It's transparency of the total cost of your ticket.
Well, you know, it's really annoying to be all I'm feed up, you know? I'm feed up with feds. No, I'm fed up with fees is what it is. And it's everywhere. It's what corporations are doing. In fact, I mean, along the same lines, and it really is along the same lines, I had an argument with my cable company today because I noticed my broadcast TV surcharge of $8.85. I can't not have broadcast TV and get rid of that fee. I have to pay for it. And certain airlines charge you for paying by credit card. You can't pay any other way, but they charge you for taking the credit card. So I think that there does need to be a disclosure on fees because people don't know what they're paying. Just like at one time, there was a requirement to list what the taxes were compared to what the fares were. Because if you look at your fare to overseas to London, it might only be $80, but the taxes are $647. So it's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
Okay, Micah, I have one better than that for you. So I did a little bit of research for this article, and I went to the three major U.S. airlines to look at, for the same day, a flight from Burbank to St. Louis. And I logged into each of the systems as though I was a general customer, so without my frequent flyer status. And wow, what an eye-opening experience that was, and how you're hit with all these other charges and upgrades that you can possibly do. And then when it came time, the thing that really shocked me was selecting the seat. Most of them, you can get a middle seat in the very back of the plane. But if you wanted to sit in the middle section or further front in economy, the price varied. And it varied greatly upon the three different airlines that I was looking at. And so the fares went everywhere from $19.99 on Delta to $29 for an exit row on American, $21 for a window, $17 for a middle, $19 for an aisle, or if you really wanted to sit far up front, it was $34 for the window. And United, it was $63 for a middle seat, $66 for a window, and $67 for an aisle. But the direction of the flight, I had different prices. So coming back, I would have to pay more if I wanted a pre-assigned seat. Now, what I found really interesting on Delta, I could not book a seat in the back of the plane until I bought the ticket, or there was no seat assignment. Once I put in my frequent flyer number, all these seats all of a sudden became available. And I found that really awkward, it's just kind of deceptive marketing. And United, it was American when I did that. There were no window or aisle seats available. But once I put my frequent flyer number in again, these seats became available for free. They were, of course, in the back, but I didn't have access to them before.
Brian, did you feel like in this process across these different airlines, did you feel like you knew what the total price was going to be?
Oh, absolutely not.
Oh, no. Oh.
And I knew what the price of the ticket, what the base ticket. So, for example, on United, it was $479. And that was in just basic economy, so not economy plus. On American, it was $528, although they did offer me an upgrade for $600 to first class. On Delta, it was $377, but I could go from their basic product to their not their comfort plus, but the regular economy. That was a $60 upgrade charge for that. Hmm. So it was really all over the board over these options. And it was phenomenally confusing. And I'm an experienced traveler.
Yeah.
So I had absolutely no clue what the real ticket price was until I actually bought it. But as Micah was talking about, with all the fees for priority boarding, for access through TSA, many airlines have the fast track access, for booking your seat and what part of the plane you within economy, I'm talking about what part of the plane you want to be in, you have no idea what the ticket price is going to be.
Hmm. Yeah, we see in the LA Times that United Airlines is going to start charging a fee for economy class seats that are closer to the front. United Airlines President Scott Kirby said at the International Aviation Forecast Summit, this is a quote, we've got economy plus today, which has more legroom. I think that's like around 5 inches.
It's actually three. There's one aircraft that they have probably four seats on the aircraft that have 5 inches of extra leg room.
And he says, but there are also rows that don't have more leg room, but they are at the front of the airplane. We are now going to let those people select those seats as well for a fee. So yet another fee. Of course, fees, a lot of the airline profits, of course, come from fees, so this has become a major portion of the contribution to earnings,
and they're taxed at a different rate or not taxed at all because their fees are not fair. So the taxing system is different, and the reason that I put both these articles up here is because the system is truly feed up.
Yeah.
And you know what? I have to say, I think that it's so confusing for the general public because they'll get on the plane and they did pay something extra. So they feel like, well, but I paid extra. So they feel like they deserve something, but it's actually just the seat that they picked. So they think that they're getting like economy comfort, but they're just getting a seat that's quote unquote, you know, more desirable than another seat that's exactly the same.
Yes. Yeah. Betty, we wanted to ask you too about another revenue source for airlines, and that's the sort of the branded credit cards that are sold. Do you get involved in trying to convince passengers to?
I don't like hawking. Yeah. I don't like selling. So I don't. I used to try to do that a long time ago. And you make a PA and you walk through, but I found that I really that people are going to get a credit card where they want a credit card, you know, and I really wasn't making much money doing it, and I was taking a lot of time. And I also think it's slightly irritating for the passenger. They don't like the long PA, and they don't like to be sold to, so I bailed on that.
Yeah, I think that a long pitch is kind of irritating.
It's like an advertisement on the plane when they're trying to.
Right. I mean, if it was really short and sweet and say, hey, we offer this card and, you know, I don't know, whatever the deal is, you know, if there's a special, this, you know, for the first 12 months, you'll get 5% back or, you know, whatever it is, just sort of a statement of that and then leave it at that. And I would be fine with that. But yeah, it's the long advertisement that.
I don't think it's fair to the passenger or the flight attendants to be putting a spiff on selling a credit card online, because it changes the relationship between the flight attendant and the passenger. All of a sudden, the flight attendant is a salesperson as opposed to an emergency, you know, a person there in case of an emergency and to deal with passenger comfort.
Right. All right. Well, let's shift away from commercial airlines for a moment. And talk military. This is from CNBC. Military experts say Iran's new fighter jet is actually a U.S. plane from the 1970s. Micah, what's this all about?
Well, it looked like, based on the article that I read, that Iran announced, it was on the 22nd of August, they had a brand new fighter. And when everybody looked at it, they said, wait a minute, that's an F-5. And they and apparently we sold some F-5s to the Iranians, I believe, and they've just basically copied it and made it themselves and have their own version of it based on at least what's looked at from the outside. And then as a kind of a follow-up to that, and I found this only yesterday, one of their F-5s just crashed yesterday. The pilot died in the crash, and the co-pilot is hospitalized, and they said it was a technical malfunction. So I'm curious if, you know, what we know about that and what's actually happening. Is it an F-5? I'm guessing that it is. And you've had some experience with engines in Iran, haven't you, Max?
Well, yeah, before the Iranian Revolution of 1978-79, when the Shah was deposed, that country had military aircraft that it had purchased from the U.S., in this case, the F-5s, which I think they purchased in 1974, and as well as some commercial aircraft. And, of course, after the revolution there, the sources for spare parts and everything dried up. At least it did for the commercial world. David, on the F-5s, did Iran suffer from the same kind of problems maintaining those aircraft and getting spare parts?
Absolutely. The Sigei, which is the current indigenous fighter for Iran, is actually an F-5. And there has been a progression of them. In the 70s, we sold the Shah of Iran, had probably the second most powerful air force in the world behind the United States, from F-4Es to F-4Cs to F-5s to the only export customer for the F-14 Tomcat. Needless to say, during the Iran-Iraq War, those were attritioned. They've kept the F-14s flying, and one of the reasons why we don't have any F-14s that aren't in museums, and if they are in museums, they were completely scrapped, was because we didn't want the F-14 Tomcat parts to go to Iran. Originally, about 5 years ago, they came out with the Sigei 2, which was a F-5, but it had twin tails, which sort of looked like an upgrade. However, the twin tail mechanism has failed, so they reverted back to a single tail like the original F-5s. It's an indigenous fighter. They are being built from scratch, but they are really basically were completely reverse engineered from the original F-5s that we sent over them, the F-5Es and F-5Fs. So it has some upgraded avionics, it has some upgraded engines, but what looks like an F-5 smells like an F-5 is a MiG-28. So I'm sure that in the next world, the next Tom Cruise movie, we will be fighting the MiG-28s again like we did previously. But it is for a country like the Soviet Union or China or Iran or North Korea, reverse engineering technology to make a new aircraft, quote unquote, is a major quantum leap. It's how Tupolev started building full-scale bombers, because they used three captured B-29s to make the Tu-4 Bull. It's happened in China, where they have actually reverse engineered Soviet aircraft or Russian aircraft to make their own indigenous aircraft. So while it's kind of a joke that what we're seeing is an F-5, for a country with sparse technical aspects and limited resources from other nations or worldwide, it's an accomplishment. Now, is it going to get shot down over the Persian Gulf within minutes because there's F-22s and everything else? Absolutely. But it's a step for them to make their own indigenous aircraft, which every country wants. It's why India is always looking to purchase not only an aircraft, but the rights to build that aircraft so they can learn from that technology. So that's where we are on the Russian Sergei 2, 3, and 4. An F-5 by any other name is an F-5, but it's a little bit more of an accomplishment than the mainstream media or the mainstream aviation media want it to be, because it was built from scratch, reversed engineered from parts that we had given them in the 70s.
Interesting. And there's a certain prestige element to this too, I would think, David, for a country to be able to say that they produce, you know, an indigenous fighter jet, maybe somewhat similar to years in the past and the commercial side where, you know, you wanted your flagship airline for your country to fly 747s. When, you know, that was the statement that you had arrived. So I imagine it's kind of similar here.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, swinging back a little bit to the commercial side, Brian, you found this article on cheatsheet.com. How much do flight attendants make? And the answer is, I guess it depends on the source of the data. But the Bureau of Labor Statistics says that the median wage was $50,000. 500 in 2017, the lowest 10% earning less than 26,860, and the highest 10% earning more than 79,520. And then PayScale says the average flight attendant salary is $39,000. They're $39,022, with a range from $23,000 to $82,000. They also say that entry-level income ranged between $22,000 and $57,000, depending on individual performance. And then Glassdoor says the average reported salary in their system for flight attendants is $52,217, some as low as $18,000. So, Betty, we're not going to ask you how much
that's okay.
You make.
Yeah, I don't mind, but it varies a lot because there's so many different factors. Like, it used to be a long time ago when I first started, we really didn't make very much money to begin with. Like the joke was always like, we qualify for food stamps, you know, like when you started out. But now we used to have a cap on how much we can fly, like the pilots do. But most airlines now have gotten rid of that. So really, you have people that are making quite a bit of money, because if you have a lifestyle where you can work a lot. I know one guy, flight attendant, who works every day. He works every day, and he makes so much money. He got audited because they were like, I don't think a flight attendant can make this much money. But he's working every day. So, you know, it's nice that you have the flexibility. So say you are junior and you're at the low end of the pay scale. If you do have, you know, trying to get out of debt or whatever, you can work a lot. And, you know, it's a way that you can change your life, your pay scale, by just, deciding to work a little or a lot.
Sure.
Yeah. And that's really the reason why I submitted this article, because we had an expert on with us. And I just thought it was interesting where the low could be $18,000 a year, which I think in many states would qualify you for food stamps. But yet there are other people, like you said, that are doing quite well. And just promoting the field of being a flight attendant, that you can actually make reasonable money doing it. I also thought that it was real interesting. This article talked about how your base location could affect how much you make. So they're saying in San Francisco and Houston could be 10% more, whereas Atlanta and Miami could pay 15% less than the national average. So I had a question for you over, if you don't live at your home airport and have to commute, I'm assuming your pay is still based upon the airport that you're based out of. And is there a lot of jockeying for that extra 10% to get to those positions?
Now, my airline pays the same no matter where you live, so that's not a factor. But I have heard of airlines where they had a premium if the cost of living it was high. Like when they lived in Honolulu, they'd get paid extra. But my airline, it's the same no matter where you live. And if you commute, it's just your choice to do that. So any expenses you incur, you know, it's your own dollar.
How about other expenses like uniforms, for example? How is that handled?
Again, I'm only speaking for my airline, but they pay for the uniforms. And if you want extras or you like different things, you can buy them. But so basically, the uniforms are not a big expense. Like if you don't have much money, if you're low on the pay scale, you'll just deal with the amount they give you for free.
And when you're traveling and have to overnight, I'm assuming lodging's taken care of. Are all meals taken care of? Is there any other money that they might give you for either entertainment or transportation, or do they really just expect you to rest in the hotel and that's it?
No, we get a per diem. It's a certain amount per hour, and that's a different amount if you're domestic or international. So you could, it's everybody does something different, but, you know, you could not, you know, spend a lot of money. Some people, when they're really new, they bring a lot of their own food and they cook a lot of their own food. So then they can like pocket the money, the per diem amount per hour. And then you have other people who don't care at all and spend a lot on their layovers. It's very flexible. But actually, I got to tell you, when I worked for People Express all those years ago, my first airline, we had cash on the plane because we took the money for the tickets. And so with the purser or flight leader, whatever you want to call it, had a suitcase full of money. So at the end of the day, you would count out, even for the pilot. You'd get up to the cockpit and you'd be like, okay, here's your 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You'd get like $36 or whatever it was for your layover in cash.
Yeah. I bet those days are long gone.
Yeah.
And then, Betty, some of the other benefits that you have, such as the ability to travel for nearly free, or insurance, or 401ks, or retirement programs. What other benefits do the airlines offer flight attendants as a form of compensation?
Well, see, I personally feel like I'm paid well. Wealth is very relative, and I'm travel rich. So basically, the free flights to me, if you would add up all of, especially if you're going to talk about first class seats and business class seats, if you would add that up over my career, it's like a little lottery. You know, like, it's like I got the winning ticket. But yes, the 401k, there's like a matching 401k, which is great. Our health benefits are good. There's a lot to be said for the job. I used to think after September 11th and everybody took a lot of pay cuts and things, we weren't paid very well. But even then I thought, well, you know, it's not paying that well, but I'm still getting to travel. So, you know, it depends on what your priorities are.
It's still based on an hourly rate from the time the door closes until the time the door opens, correct?
Correct. Yeah. So we don't get paid for boarding and deplaning, which is the worst part for us.
Yeah. I think a lot of people don't realize that.
Yeah. I'm assuming there's a bunch of other duties they have to do, like the pilots have to do an awful lot of pre-flight briefing. And I'm assuming that the flight attendants do as well, right? So there's all this time that you're actually working. Yeah. And you're not getting paid. Well, you're not getting paid directly. I think the airlines will argue that pay is baked into your hourly wage, but
and it is, because it does. When you actually tell someone your hourly wage, sometimes they'll say, "Oh, that seems like a lot," but that's because that is taking into account that there's a lot of time you're at work or you're not getting paid, and that's why you always see younger flight attendants on the shorter flights. Because everybody likes to get paid when they're at work. So if you have four flights a day, half of your day, you're not getting paid. And that's why the longer flights, on international flights, you'll see older flight attendants, because you're maximizing your work time.
Yeah, greater percentage of the day you're getting paid. Sure, that makes sense.
And then I'm assuming if there's a weather delay between flights, you're also not getting paid for that time as well, correct?
Correct. Yeah, we don't like them either. You know, we apologize for them, but we're the ones going, "Arr."
Well, let's talk a little bit about Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. As I mentioned, it was, what, Betty, 2005 when you started that podcast?
Yes, I started at the beginning of podcasting. I call myself a pod father.
I remember listening to you and Joe Dion with me.
Yes, he's the one who started me podcasting. And he basically was in at the very beginning.
Yes. Yeah, so he was an influence in terms of starting your show. Huh? Did he? Because I was going to ask you, what made you think of a podcast, and how did you learn how to do a podcast?
Yes, well, I always have a lot of interest. I always have, and I like the stock market, and so I used to get the MIT magazine. So I had heard about podcasting like right when it started and thought it sounded like an interesting idea. And then Joe was on my flight and he had a recorder and a microphone and he said he had a podcast. And I was like, "You do?" Because you know, I had been reading about them. So I was all excited about it. So as soon as we were going to Maui and as soon as our service was done and the lights were off, I went right up there to the cockpit and told him stories for his podcast. And he liked my story so much that he said, "Why don't you be a correspondent for my show?" And I was like, "Yeah." So I went and got the equipment. And then I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know anything about anything about how to podcast. And there were no books at the time because it was not even a subject. So all the stuff I sent Joe was terrible. And he said, "Why don't you do your own book?" So basically, I started by default.
But Joe had you on the show as a guest a couple of times, didn't he?
Twice, yes, a few times.
That's what I thought, because that's how I found you. I still have Joe on my Skype list here. I was a contributor with Joe. I haven't been able to get in touch with him for years. But
you know, I don't know what happened to him either, because I've tried, and because people ask me, and I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, if you're out there, Joe, listening, get in touch. Let us know what you're up to. Of course, nowadays, there's quite a number of aviation-related podcasts, many from other airline employees. We have an airline captain, a former fighter pilot, a dispatcher, and others. One of our contributors, Launchpad Marzari, wanted to know if you ever had contact, Betty, with any of the other airline podcasters.
Oh, I was going to say, before we go on with that, let's say what Launchpad really said. He wants to know if you guys really have a secret handshake.
You know, I don't, I haven't listened to the other one, so we don't have like a little clique or a little underground network. There is Heather Poole. She does, she had a book and she has a blog. We're friendly in that if somebody comes to me, like wanting to be on like a TV show or something, because she shows her face and I don't. So lots of times I'll send them off to her and she's done the same thing to me. So we actually have a nice little rapport.
I think Heather's been on the show with us.
Yes.
Has she? I can't remember what episode number. How about your podcasting relationship with your airline? I know airlines tend to be very conservative. And generally, employees are certainly not encouraged to be visibly active.
Correct.
In social media.
Yes, I don't. I've never told the airline. I always had the idea that if I asked, they would say no. So I didn't want to ask. And the airlines just don't want you to talk for them. And every once in a while, like my show really is pretty sweet and good-natured, but you know, there can be a slightly racy story. So I never say what airline, and I don't have any connection, but I've always been waiting to get in trouble because there are media policies and things like that, you know. So one time I got an email from the chief pilot and I was like, oh, no, oh, no, because it said podcast in the title. And I was like, oh, no, it's finally happening. I'm getting in trouble. And he said he was a big fan of the show and he recognized a lot of the voices. So I was thrilled because I thought I'm going to keep him in my back pocket in case I do get in trouble. Then he retired.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good friend to hang on to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think of all the airline employees that do podcasts, to me, I think they really reflect really well on the companies they work for.
Yes, and see, that's the other thing. I don't know if they know about my podcast, but I have a feeling if they did, they'd be okay with it because I actually keep running into young flight attendants who say, I became a flight attendant from listening to your podcast. So, like, I actually make the job sound great, so I don't think they would really have, like, I try to edit out any, like, when it's just, like, kind of negative and complaining, I try to get rid of all that because nobody wants to hear that.
Yeah.
And Max, it was episode number 72 that Heather was on.
Boy, that was a long time ago. That was a long time ago.
Long time ago.
Yes, yes. Well, Betty, of course, what you do in your podcast is bring us fun and interesting stories of all different sorts, just things that you run into along the way. Do you have any favorite stories from the past years?
Yes,
maybe that
I have so many favorite stories. It's actually a problem. And actually, I fly with other flight attendants, and basically any topic they bring up, I have a story because I've been asking people for stories for like 13 years. So like I have like just files. But I'll just tell you one that I always like. It's this young Asian flight attendant, and she's got this great work ethic, and she's new, and she's flying in charge, and she's nervous. And the pilot calls back, you know, like bing bong, you know. But it was so low, she could barely hear it, and so she didn't. She didn't pick up and he had to call back again and she felt terrible that she didn't hear it. So she wanted to write it up in the logbook, you know, to get it fixed. But the mechanics in Memphis liked her write up so much that they blew it up poster size because she wrote up pilot ding dong too soft.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
It's cute.
You know? It is. Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of thing that we need these days, I think, you know.
Yes. Actually, I get emails saying that, oh, I can't handle the news. You know, it's just what I need. It's something just light and silly.
And is that where the turtle came in?
Oh, yeah. I love turtle. Herman. Herman has been just fantastic. I don't know if you want me to tell that story because it takes a good little while, but there was a crazy lady and a flight attendant that I know, real pretty, blonde, sweet as can be. She saw this thing on the window when she was boarding and she couldn't figure out what it was. So she gets closer and she's like, ma'am, what is that on the window? And the lady says, very matter-of-factly, well, that's my pet turtle, Herman. He likes to look out the window. I take him everywhere with me, the grocery store. And she had a turtle, a live turtle, suction cupped with little booties and suction cups on his arms and legs. And he stuck spread eagle on the airplane window. And my friend, who's so sweet, said, oh, ma'am, with all due respect, how do you know that Herman likes to look out the window? Because he's probably like stuck there, spread eagle, like, ah! But I've taken that story and run with it because I have my own turtle now with suction cups that I take with me. I have my own Herman.
This kind of stuff you just can't make up. I mean, the stories are great. And I also like your travel adventures because, as we've mentioned and as you have, you do like to travel and visit interesting places on vacation. And you give us some great stories from the trip, but sort of insights that are just fascinating.
Yeah, that's my favorite part is the traveling and talking about the traveling and really getting to know people. I'd like to do like off the beaten path type traveling, and I'll stay a little longer, and I like to talk to the locals, and I really feel like that is an added bonus to the. It's not just, you know, an airline podcast; it's airline and travel. So I'm going to Ecuador on Wednesday, so I'm hoping to get some good stories. You know, I'm the only person. Well, there might be a few, but most people don't want things to go wrong on their trip. But if everything goes right, you know, if everything's, the people are nice, the food's fantastic, you know, everything goes smoothly, well, that's a dud of a story.
Well, your story to see the gorillas just had me amazed that we actually went through with the whole thing and all the terrible things that happened on the way and trying to get there. It was one of the most delightful and horrible stories I've ever heard at the same
Slipping
time.
Slipping and sliding and...
Oh, my gosh. That was like that's a challenge. But, you know, I'm so glad I did it.
So I was going to ask, with your travel schedule or the flight attendants that I know, when they book a trip, it would, let's say, you know, Monday to Paris, back on Wednesday. Are you allowed to book a trip where you go to Paris on Monday and then come back the following Friday? Or you have to book it as that pair?
Yeah, it's just how they have it. That's all. That's all you're allowed to do. Every once in a while in the winter, because a lot of passengers don't like to go to Europe in the winter. So sometimes in the winter, we'll have flights that don't operate every day. So then you might have a 2 or 3, or there can be up to like a 5-day layover. But that's, you'll always have to do it as the airline has dictated.
And you can't trade for those trips either then?
You can trade the whole trip.
Right, but not a section, not a segment of it.
You actually can, but it doesn't really work out. You can, but it doesn't work out that you can just stay for a long time, usually. Mm.
You know, you've worked for, well, two different airlines, the one that you're with now and then you were with People Express before that, if I have the story correctly. I'm curious if you can – I used to fly People Express, and boy, what a hoot that was. It was amazing. How would you describe the difference between the passengers on People Express and the kind of passengers you're dealing with now? What's changed over all those years?
Well, the passengers back at People Express, it was kind of fun. They didn't train us to be nice. They were like, because you got to get the money. You have this much time to get their ticket. And you got to. So basically, it was like People Express was like, do you have an aspirin? No. Do you have a magazine? No. Do you have a pillow? No. But no, actually, we used to make fun at People Express. They were like, this is how we shut the overhead bins. And we'd be like a rah, slam. And they're like, and at the good airlines, they do it all nice and soft, you know, so not to bother anyone. But things have changed a whole lot since I've been flying, in that one of the biggest problems as a flight attendant, you know, in our perspective, is the headset, you know, the headphones, because nobody listens to us anymore. Like, we cannot get their attention. You have to say, you know, ask them a question like 4 times. So basically, it's like all of a sudden now we have basically a whole plane full of deaf people. You have to do hand signals and stuff.
They're all plugged into their.
They're all totally plugged in. Yes.
So the whole anything to drink just doesn't work anymore, huh?
And no, that's a 4-time anything to drink. Takes 4 times.
So from People Express, where the flight attendants were rude, now it's to wherever, it's your airline now, where the passengers are rude.
I wouldn't say they're rude. I would say that they, you know, are just, everybody's into their, yes. Well, I don't want to go that harsh.
Betty, I loved it when your theme song, the one that you use now, arrived. I want to ask you about that, but if it's okay with you, let me just play a few seconds
of
that.
Please.
Let's travel the world together. She can make it easy and in any kind of weather. No TSA, no bag checks, no patting down. She's talking from the skies and sending lots of feel-good sounds. Oh, Betty in the sky, have you heard her yet? She loves traveling, there's no doubt. Betty and the Jets.
That's so cool. Betty, tell us how that came to be.
See, I love it too, actually. Well, it was always going to be Betty and the Jets, the theme song, if I could have one. It's funny, when I got the theme song, I was like with other flight attendants, and they're talking about like what's going on. And it's really weird to say, oh, I'm all excited, I have a theme song. Because, you know, that just seems like out of context. Like, why do you have a theme song? Because a lot of people don't know I have the podcast. I liked that song, and I listened to the Adam Carolla podcast. And on that podcast, they would have song parodies, and they would always contribute it. They'd say, oh, this is from Dick Banks. This is from Dick Banks, Richard Banks. So I thought, wonder if I can get a hold of Richard Banks. So I just looked him up, got an email address, and sent it off to him. And I was like, can you, you know, can I can I get you to record Betty and the Jets for me? And I'll come up with the lyrics. And he was like, sure. It was amazingly easy. It didn't even cost that much money. So I came up with the lyrics. And I showed it to a friend of mine, and he was like, that's crap. He's like, I'll write you some lyrics. So he wrote the lyrics, my friend did. Uh-huh. And what's nice now is I will have young listeners who will email me, and they'll say, I heard this. So, you know, the Elton John song, they'll hear it like in a store, and they'll go, that's Betty's song. Like they haven't heard the other version.
That happened to me today, actually. It was hysterical because I knew I would be interviewing you tonight, but I happened to be out grabbing a bite at a restaurant, and the Elton John song came on, and I didn't hear the lyrics. I heard your lyrics in my head as he's singing it. I said, oh, it's Betty.
I've had that happen, too, because I've listened to it so many times, you know, editing. I'll be like in a Rite Aid, and I'm like, that's the wrong lyrics.
And just as coincidence, the other parody writer, Weird Al Yankovic, got his star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, so that just happened today.
I love him.
Mm-hmm. He's still around, huh? I haven't heard anything about him.
Yeah, he's still around. You know what? He's another one that's like always just a nice, silly, fun, you know, all everything he puts out is lighthearted.
Yes. Well, also, Betty, you've been able to become an author as a result of this podcast. Tell us about your writing.
Well, you know, that's funny, too, because a lot of things in my life happen by default, just like the podcast, because I never took a writing class in college or anything. But the podcast got kind of popular right away back when there wasn't that many podcasts. And a publisher came to me and said, you want to write a book? And I was like, OK. But actually, this is actually sort of interesting in that she helped me a lot with the first book. And then when the book came out, she basically gave me a bunch of homework assignments, like write this article, write an article for this, write an article for this to try to promote the book. And in writing those articles, I was shocked that they were getting published in like real publications, you know, like Psychology Today and AOL Online. And I was like, oh, you know, maybe I'm not so bad at this, you know? So then we wrote the second one, Betty and the Jets, Adventures of a Traveling Fool, and that's all travel stories. And basically, when I started traveling, I wasn't traveling to write about it, but I did have all these great experiences. So that book was rather easy to write because I was basically just recounting what I had done and all the crazy things I had gotten up to. But then I had this idea that I wanted to write fiction, and because you know it's more fun, you get to make it up, but also to set it in a place that I've been. So basically, you're getting like a better understanding of a place, like a little deeper than on the podcast, and with links and stuff. But then with a fictional story. So I have two, and I just sent a third one off to the editor.
I was going to ask, how did you become a science fiction writer? Because really, that's what you're writing. You're a science fiction writer now.
Yeah, somebody called it travel fantasy. And they're like, that's like a new topic. I like science fiction. So I was always like a big Star Trek person. I like science fiction. I like that kind of thing. And I don't know if I'm always going to be in that that genre because I have a whole bunch of ideas. Like maybe the next group of books might be about a flight attendant because, you know, basically you're supposed to write what you know. Right. But my fiction is like, it's not at all about anything I know, except for the traveling.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It sounds like you're just incredibly busy, but also having an incredible amount of fun. And I think that you still enjoy being a flight attendant.
Actually, I love it. I still love it, which is something that most people don't get to say about their job. I have so much fun. The flight attendants are a really diverse group of people. You can find flight attendants that do all kinds of things. We got lawyers and doctors and all. I just flew with a state representative, but not just that. We have like a camaraderie. So I have a lot of fun at work, and I love the layovers. You know, I love being in Paris and Rome. I just fly to Europe mainly. So, you know, it's hard to complain, you know, spending the afternoon in Madrid. And it affords me to do all these other things that I like to do. So like the traveling and the idea with the fiction and writing where I'm going, it's added a whole nother level. Like, I was traveling because I want to travel and I want to see everything and experience everything. And then I also had the podcast, like, on my mind, you know, like stories for the podcast as I'm traveling. So now I'm traveling because I want to travel. I got this, the stories for the podcast, but I'm also thinking about what the characters in the fiction would be doing there when they're there. So it's a little confusing.
Mind is always going. Well, Betty, what kind of a person makes a good flight attendant?
Oh, you know, I think that that's extremely important because there are a type of people that are so suited for it, like I am, someone who's just focused on the travel. If you don't take advantage of the travel benefits, that's where I think you get the cranky flight attendants that we've all run across who are just, you know, hate pouring Coke and serving chicken. And, you know, they're not taking advantage. And a lot of them don't even, those cranky ones, they don't even go out on their layover. They just, you know, slam click in the hotel room and just, you know, stay in the room. So I think that you have to have a love of travel. You have to really like people, which I still do after all these years. And the other thing is you have to know what you're getting into. So we are hiring a lot of flight attendants these days. And the attrition rate is really high. A lot of people don't stay because they get there and they say, well, I'm not going to work weekends. I'm not going to work holidays. And it's like, well, guess what? That's not the job for you because, you know, the airline is all about seniority. So you have to pay your dues. But if you know what you're getting into and you know you're going to be working weekends and holidays, and you have to really be ready for a lifestyle change because it really is a different lifestyle.
And Betty, that ties into another question I had, and it involves relationships. And I think I have many family friends that are flight attendants and pilots, and back in the 70s, a lot of marriages came as a result of that. And it doesn't seem like that happens much anymore. And maybe it's just the people that I associate with that I'm not aware of it. But it also seems that being a flight attendant can be a very solitary lifestyle. Therefore, being in a relationship, it takes a special partner in order to understand that your job is being away from home for periods of time.
Well, there's actually a lot of variables in that question and what happens. You can actually, it can be very good for a relationship because you're, you know, you miss each other after you're gone for a couple days. You know, you're not with each other 24/7 all the time. And also, because there is so much flexibility in the job, it actually works out lots of times very well for relationships and mothers and things because you can work less when the kids are little, you know, and then work more once they get older again. We actually have a lot of flight attendants who left the job when their kids were little. They've been, you know, not working for the airline for 18 years. And then they come back and get hired again. So, you know, it all depends on the people. And I don't think that it necessarily is terrible for relationships.
And a bit over relationships from years ago where pilots and flight attendants were getting married, it seemed like almost on every flight. Is that still happening or is that was that sort of the golden age of aviation? And
well, no, I still know quite a few flight attendants and pilots, like, couples, but there are a lot of divorces in those couples too. But that could be with anything, you know. But I would say I don't think it's any less than
okay.
It used to
interesting.
Be.
Betty, do you have any tips that you would give travelers, you know, from your perspective?
Oh, I got all kind of tips. Well, because I see all the people doing all the things wrong, and you're like, oh my gosh. I think the biggest thing, and it's going to seem way too simple, is to actually think about what you're going to be doing beforehand, which is what people don't seem to do. You know, they check their diapers and their medications that they're going to need. They show up in tank tops and shorts, and then they're surprised that they're cold. Everything that they need is in their suitcase. It's in the overhead bin. So like 8 times during the flight, they have to get it up in there, and then there's a bag in front of it. So they're making their experience so much worse. And if they would just think, okay, what am I going to need on this flight and have it, you know, easily accessible? I know that sounds so simple, but it's really the truth.
People just don't think.
That's actually what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's good.
And Betty, I remember you talking or telling a story about the passenger that had the octopus hoodie thing on. So do you think that's a good product to have or a bad product?
I didn't think that was a good product at all. It looked like this giant, like, astronaut or helmet, or like maybe those old diving before they actually, you know, like you had this big round circular thing on top of your head. And he's like, oh, so it's like supposed to help you sleep. But everybody on the plane was just looking at him like, you look crazy. So I don't think that product.
Yeah, so still there are some travel products that a little bit more thought needs to go into those as well.
Betty, where can our listeners who haven't been listening to your show learn more about you and the books and find the podcast and all that? Where can they go?
Sure. I'm at BettyInTheSky.com, and I'm Betty in the Sky on Skype. I'm at Betty in the Sky on Instagram. And you can find me at any place you get podcasts. You don't even have to put in the whole name, Betty in the Sky with the suitcase. You can just put in Betty in the Sky.
Betty has a number of books out now. If people want to get those, what are their titles and where can people find them?
Sure. Well, I think you already mentioned the Betty and this guy with the suitcase, hilarious stories of air travel by the world's favorite flight attendant. They came up with that title also. I was very worried about that world's favorite flight attendant subtitle. But they were saying, oh, you could say it's the world's best pizza. And they were saying, but at the time, they're like, you can actually prove it in numbers, because at the time there wasn't any other flight attendant podcasters. So I definitely had the most downloads. Flight attendant. So, and then actually the second book is Betty and the Jets, The Adventures of a Traveling Fool. And Tar is the book one of the Tar collection. And then The Tar Maker is the second. And now I've got Marjo the Only coming out, I'd say, in 2 months.
Ah, and people can find those
just on Amazon.
Yeah, sure. Very good.
I also do audiobooks. I spend a lot of time in the closet recording.
So, Betty, one flight I took to Hamburg, I was walking through the airport and in the gift shop saw the Betty in the Sky with the Suitcase doll. You know, it's kind of like a Barbie doll thing. Was that you or your agent or your company doing that? Or is that someone else who's making money off of you? I was really wondering about that.
Well, you know, that is still a mystery. I don't know if I'm ever going to know the answer to that. I didn't have anything to do with it. And you have to wonder if your ego's too big, because it just says Betty the stewardess. I did some searching online, and I thought, well, maybe there's a Debbie and a Jane the stewardess too. But nope, it's just Betty.
Betty.
And the other weird thing is that on the suitcase, there's a headset, like for the podcast. And it's like, that doesn't seem like you would have that on just the flight attendant doll. So I have no idea where that came from, but the person who saw it sent me two. So I have two.
Yeah, it's got to be you, Betty. It's got to be you.
I know, but I didn't make the doll. And funny that my sister was like, I can't believe you got a doll. And I'm like, well, I didn't really get a doll because, you know, I don't have anything to do with
Well, you have a doll,
but
without permission.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's kind of fun to say you have a doll.
Yeah. We can't say that. At least I don't think any of us can. Brian, there's no Brian doll.
No, there's no Brian frequent flyer doll. That does not exist. Nope.
Okay.
And it seems curious that it's in Hamburg also.
Betty's such a good German name. Yeah.
Next time I'm there, I could pick one up for you.
Well, I have two. I cut the hair. I cut the hair of the one. I take it with me to take pictures of the doll. Now I got a doll and a turtle. People are really going to think I'm weird.
All right. Well, whether we think you're weird or not, we're going to keep listening, Betty. We want to thank you for all those years of great stories. Lots of good times, enjoyment, really, really appreciate it. And it's been wonderful having you on the Airplane Geeks podcast. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you all. It's been really fun for me.
Good luck on your next adventures and on your next trip.
Okay, thanks.
And I can't wait to hear the podcast tomorrow. Yippee, as I always say on Twitter, whenever one comes out.
Oh, it's not coming out till the 7th. I'm just doing it early. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
I have to do it early before I go to Ecuador.
I'll still say yippee when it comes out.
Okay. Thank you.
And now we have an Across the Pond segment from Peter Johnson. Peter talks to Neil Wilson. He's from the Light Aircraft Association, and they talk about the role in supporting general aviation in the UK. Yeah.
Neil Wilson, welcome to the Across the Pond segment on the Airplane Geeks podcast. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to meeting you again and telling you all about what we've got coming up at show in the future.
Well, Neil, let's first, before we talk about the rally, can you tell us what the LAA is and what's its role in UK general aviation?
We look after aircraft, the Light Aircraft Association, LAA for short, look after aircraft, home-built aircraft, could be kit manufacturers. You might go and buy a kit, 1, 2, and 4-seat aeroplanes, or buy plans and build your own, or orphaned aircraft like Jodels and Condors, or Oscars, where aircraft in the past have gone, the aircraft manufacturer's gone bust, and they then look after them. So they've got somewhere to be administrated and also engineered and looked after. The CAA let us become experts in that field of things, where let's say they give the BGA, the Glider Association, look after gliders, and the balloon people the balloons. So that way we all come under the umbrella of the CAA. We make sure everything's done correctly, so every aircraft flying around the UK that you see, of course, is then flying safely for the occupants and other people who are underneath it.
And do you have regulatory powers, Neil, or is that held by the Civil Aviation Authority?
Yeah, that's with the CAA, and we obviously have regular meetings with them. Our engineering department go and see them regularly, as well as our CEO Steve Slater, who'll go and make sure that everything is done as the way it should be. So CAA have been very good. I mean, they really, you know, they let us look after many, many things. So we've become the experts in those things, so that whether it be engines or aircraft issues, when it look at safety and such like, and how things should be improved, as well as engine manufacturers and other regulatory bodies.
Neil, is the American equivalent the EAA? Is that something we could compare you to?
Yeah, very much so. The EAA, based at Oshkosh, of course, is the Experimental Aircraft Association. We are the LAA, based at Telwestern near Silverstone. So that's a very similar sort of thing, very much so.
Right, OK. I've got some context now for it. And how old is the LAA? Is it, I seem to think it's quite recent, and it's still in its infancy a bit in terms of time.
Yes, we've actually been going 72 years. It was 1946 it originally started under ULAA. And then it became the PFA, the Popular Flying Association, which many people knew us by.
Right.
And we changed about 10 years ago to the LAA, which is more of a modern name. The Light Aircraft Association, really, in that title, tells people what we actually do more.
Yeah, okay. I'm with you now. That makes it more familiar. So the LAA has this role within the UK general aviation sector, but it also helps to promote that through an annual rally. And I believe that's coming up on the horizon. Tell me about the rally and who's going to be there. What can they see? How's it going to work?
The LA rally is the LAA Farewell Rally, based near Northampton. It's going to be on the 31st of August and the 1st and 2nd of September. It's going to have, hopefully, if the weather this and it looks good at the moment, but 800 to 1,000 aircraft on the Friday, Saturday and Sunday. We have aircraft manufacturers there. You're going to have people like the TL Aviation, Sting, the others there, some new aircraft, the Avalanche and such like. As well, of course, indoors, we're going to have many manufacturers, flight equipment for pilots, propeller manufacturers there, as well as home-built tent. It's very, very popular, where people can see English wheeling, woodwork and metalwork, and also going to have a company called Metal Seagulls who will be building a Zen Air aeroplane, the main fuselage, during 3 days. So there's plenty to see. We're also going to have a racing theme this year. We're going to have the two personal Mugles there, which is Alex Henshaw, because had the original one. We went to Cape Town and back. That's coming over from Shuttleworth. We're going to have a racing pit, so we're going to have people walking around in white overalls looking the part. And then we're going to have David Bill's more modern replica, the red one, which you may have seen a year or two ago there, plus other racing aircraft. So it's going to be a good theme, lots of things to see, and entertainment in the evenings as well, Friday and Saturday.
Right, okay. And will there be air displays during those days as well? I know you mentioned some aircraft they'd see, but flying as well?
Only arrivals and departures. We don't actually have a flying display. There's so much to see there. As I say, lots of people. It's a bit of a party, really. It's a once-a-year get-together of LA members and GA people to come along. You don't just have to be an LA member. You can come along. The general public can come along. Other people who fly from Air Force and Cessnas and Pipers, etc. Please come along. If you can't get a slot, you must get a slot, phone up, or look on the website for a slot and come in at a certain time. If you can't come by car, you're most welcome.
Right, OK. So, Neil, where can we find out more about the event, how to get there by land or by air or by other travel means?
Have a look at our website, which is www.laa.uk.com. And on that front page, it gives you, there's actually a picture of the Percival Mugell, the red one in the center of the homepage there. Click on that, and it takes you to all the pages about where we are, the prices to get in, etc. And if you want to, the hours were open, etc. The hours were open is from 9:30 till 5 o'clock and 4 o'clock on Sunday.
Wonderful. Well, Neil, wish you all the very best with the event. Sadly, I can't be there, but looking forward to hearing a little bit about it. Maybe in the future you could come back and tell us a bit more about the LAA and the great work you do.
Yeah, thanks very much. We will do. We look forward to it. And give an idea, Arthur Williams is going around in his Piper Cub. You may have seen that on the TV recently, going to fly across Britain. He's one of our ambassadors, and he's hopefully will be at the rally. People like him that, you know, is the backbone of the LA members. So if you've seen Arthur going around the UK in this program, come and come. Hopefully, mate, come and see him whizzing around the UK in another LA event soon.
Yeah, we did a big feature on Extended. Our last episode was with Arthur. What an enjoyable chap. Mm. And he's done a fantastic job of promoting general aviation in the UK and abroad as well. So kudos to Arthur, and anyone who wants to go along and see Arthur, go along to the Sidewell Rally on the 31st of August through to the 2nd of September. Neil, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks very much, Steve. Bye.
Thanks. Well, this is Peter Johnson reporting for the Airplane Geeks from across the pond.
Thanks, Peter. Oh, the link that Neil mentioned in that conversation doesn't seem to be working right now. So it may be by the time you listen to it, but there's another link that does seem to work, which is lightaircraftassociation.co.uk. So you can try that as well. And those links will be in the show notes. We've got a couple of images, including one of Arthur Williams that they talked about and a link to his TV program. So look for all that in the show notes. Now, as I'm sure you're aware, we have recorded segments from our contributors. Micah provides many of them, as does Launchpad Marzari and Peter Johnson with his Across the Pond segment. But you too can find your own little segment on the Airplane Geeks podcast. And here's Launchpad Marzari to tell you a little bit about that.
Thanks, Max. I would like to encourage our listeners to submit their short stories about their special aviation experience. We're not looking for, there I was, as I came over the top inverted, I saw the three bogeys turning in, I only had one sidewinder left, but on the good side, my wing was no longer on fire. No, that's not what we're looking for. What we're looking for is that time you got to do an oil change on the last flying zero, or taking your dad up as your first passenger, or that perfect flight, or that surprise free flight just because you were standing at the right spot at the right time, or that special air show experience. We're looking for short stories about that special aviation experience.
All right, thanks, Launchpad. And you can send those to us at thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com if you need a little bit of help in terms of the techniques for creating an audio recording. Just let us know, and we'd be happy to help you out. Now, Launchpad, actually, besides asking you to submit a favorite story, he created one that represents his best flight, and we're going to have that coming up in our next episode, so you can listen for that. And also next episode, we'll have part two of Micah's interviews from the Spurwink Farm Pancake Breakfast and Fly-In. Micah, maybe you can give us just a quick little preview of what folks are going to get to listen to next week.
Yeah, I have an interview with Bunk Chase, who is one of the original attendees of the Pancake Breakfast and Fly-In, and past president of EAA Chapter 141. He's been starting the fly-ins. He's been doing it for some 23 years. And then Dave DeVries, who's the president of the New Hampshire Pilots Association, he came flying in with a 1935 Kinner Sportwing, the last one in existence. I've got an interview with him. Tim Bickford and his travel Naval Air 4000. We interviewed him, talked a little bit about his aircraft, and then Jonathan Good, who's an FAA inspector and has been the fly-in air boss for 16 years. So we got those coming up, and hopefully you'll enjoy them.
Yeah, they're really fascinating interviews, really great stuff. Mike, I appreciate you taking the time to do that. We also received some photographs from Ernie. He wrote and he said he enjoyed the whole podcast, especially the interviews with Spurwink fly-in visitors. He said he sent us rather a couple of pictures from the 2017 event that he attended. He said they give a good sense of the location and the quantity of aircraft, even though about half the field is shown. So look for those as well, coming up in episode 519 in a week.
And I got to thank Ernie, because he's the one that told me about the fly-in, and he was there. We had a great time together, and one of those pictures from the sky, he's flying his helicopter, and that's the one that he took me on a ride in, and what a great guy he is.
Very cool. All right, a little bit of What's Up with the Geeks. Max Trescott, anything going on in your world aviation-wise?
Well, I can see clearly now, or maybe a little more clearly. Yeah, this August has been almost completely gray here in the San Francisco Bay Area. It was so bad a couple of days ago. I was in the traffic pattern with a student pilot. It was 8 mile visibility when we took off. An hour and a half later, it had dropped to essentially two and a half mile visibility. And it was just smoke pouring in from more than 100 miles away. And just all depends on which direction the winds are blowing as to how much we have and where and so on. But all I can tell you is this is certainly the worst fire season in terms of smoke in the Bay Area that I remember for probably 6, 7, 8 years. And so it was kind of nice today to finally see some blue sky for a change. And then Labor Day, I am headed out for Knoxville, Tennessee. I have been lucky enough to get scheduled for training in the Cirrus SF-50 Vision Jet. So I will be working on my type rating, rocking and rolling in the full motion simulator there, going to ground school. Whole process takes about 10 days or so.
Wait a minute.
Yeah?
You have to say that more slowly. The Cirrus Vision what?
The Cirrus SF-50 Vision Jet. That's the single-engine jet that Cirrus now makes.
Wait a minute. We're going to be able to say Max Trescott, jet pilot.
Yeah. Well, my wife calls me Jet Boy, but yeah, so you can call me that. Jet Boy. Yeah, now I've got a couple of other type ratings, but I don't fly jets very often, and I'm really looking forward to the Cirrus Jet simply because they've done such a great job of making the interior so similar to the SR-20 and 22 that I think it's going to be easy step up. Well, not easy. It's going to be easier for pilots to step up from the piston-powered airplanes to the jet. The inside is just looks like a really well-appointed car. You know, it's a very clean interior. You know, typically when you think of a jet, you think of 100 switches and dials and stuff just scattered over the entire interior. The Cirrus Jet is not like that at all. It's just a very nice, clean, simple layout and arrangement. So that's where I'm going to be headed, and looking forward to finally being able to fly with people.
And it also has a parachute too, huh?
You know, it is. Not only is it the only single-engine certificated jet, but it's also the only jet with a parachute.
Does one have something to do with the other?
It could be. No, the Cirrus philosophy has been since day one that there ought to be an alternative to dying in a mid-air collision. One of the founders was, in fact, in a mid-air collision in which the people in the other aircraft died. And so from that day forward, he felt that, you know, airplanes ought to be equipped with a parachute. And when they finally designed the first plane, they included one.
Hmm. Has Cirrus been delivering the Vision Jet to customers?
They started deliveries about a year and a half ago, and there are probably somewhere around 50 or 55 of them out there currently. And I think they were projected to build around 80 of them this year, and the backlog is about 700 jets. So, yeah, they're going to be pumping out jets for a long time. So I figured it might be fun to get in on the early part of this, this
and
wave.
Do you know what the fuel burn is on that?
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. I haven't gotten to that part of the POH yet. So, no, I don't.
Well, we're going to expect a full detailed report when you return from that adventure, Max.
Oh, I'm looking forward to sharing it. It should be fun.
Great. All right, Brian, anything you want to mention to our audience?
Oh, a few things. I just wanted to thank everyone that wrote in from my farewell piece. Or it's not really a farewell piece, but when I announced that I was stepping down as the associate producer of the show, the love and support that I've gotten has been fantastic, and really appreciate everyone that bothered to write in. So thank you, everyone. Truly, truly humbling. And if anyone wants to meet me in person this Saturday, I'm planning on being at the Planes of Fame monthly meeting out at the Chino Airport. So that's where they talk about a particular aircraft, and they get a food truck to come in. And I just thought that would be a perfect venue to have a meetup for any of our Southern California listeners that might want to get together. And then for our bits and pieces segment, I decided to go to the there's a pop-up gallery here in Pasadena, and they're going to have an exhibition or a showing of the Pan Am experience, which I think will be kind of fun to see all the stuff from, again, the sort of golden years of aviation. And I really have no expectations on what it's going to be, but I'm enthusiastically looking forward to going over to the gallery and seeing the stuff. And I'm planning on doing a recording for the bits and pieces segment.
Oh, great, great. Now, this Planes of Fame event, you said is Saturday. That's this Saturday. What's that, September 1st?
Correct, September 1st. So it's always the first Saturday of the month, and it starts at 10 o'clock, and it'll go 10 till noon, 10 till 11:30-ish. I guess each show's a little bit different. The aircraft that they talk about, and I should have looked it up, which aircraft it's actually going to be this Saturday, because I don't remember, they'll actually take it up flying as well. So you could watch it fly. And yeah, like I said, there would be a food truck there, so there would be some food as well. And it's a really great event and fun way to spend your Saturday morning.
All right, great. Micah, you had a little topic, something that you found that you wanted to mention?
Yeah, I was looking through the latest Smithsonian Air and Space magazine, and there was a really interesting article, I thought, about the F-111. And the title was the Navy's F-111 really that bad? And it talks about the development of the F-111 and how it was supposed to be for both the Air Force and the Navy, and compares it a little bit to the F-35 program. And I think it offers some nice insights and comparisons to the program there. And it was a good read. I thought so anyway. Did you read it, David?
I did. It's spot on. And if you've been listening to this podcast for how many years now, I constantly compare the F-35 to the F-111. Jack of all trades, master of none.
That's okay. Well, we'll have a link to the article to Air and Space Magazine in the show notes. You can look for that.
And Max, looked it up. So I looked it up, and at the Planes of Fame, they're doing the Douglas AD-4 Sky Raider. So that's the aircraft of the month.
Okay, very good. I just wanted to give everybody an example of the kind of listener that we have on this podcast. You know, we always love getting feedback from you all, and some corrections sometimes to things we say, topics for us to consider on the show, and just some really interesting people. And this came from Frank. And just to give you an idea of the sorts of folks that we love to communicate with on the show, Frank says he's from Germany. He says, I've been listening to your podcast for about 2 years now. I'm also a big fan of the U.S., and my family and I did already several trips to many locations of your country. Frank says, this, of course, included visiting AirVenture twice and flying around as I have a U.S.-validated private pilot license. He says, my biggest dream is to fly across the entire country one day. This is a big goal, and therefore I try to keep in contact with the U.S. aviation community as much as I can. So Frank is writing to become a member of our Slack listener team, and so we sent him an invite. So we're looking forward to seeing Frank in Slack. Now, he didn't mention it, but in his email signature, Frank's on Facebook. He's on YouTube. And he's got a blog, Germerican Pilots. It's about flying in the USA. He explains this blog is aimed at private pilots and aviation enthusiasts and deals with general aviation in the U.S. and everything related to it. And because Frank is in Germany, this is in German, although I found that the Chrome browser did an outstanding job of translating it to English. So very exciting. Frank is out there in social media, blogging and doing all of these other things. And as I mentioned, we'll look forward to seeing him in our Slack listener team.
And across the front of the page, it says, Über das Fliegen in den USA.
Yeah. So,
flying over the United States.
Yeah, I was looking through it in German before I translated it, and I actually remembered more German from my high school German language classes than I really thought I would remember, after all.
So are we going to do the rest of the show in German?
Well, I think we should translate the rest of his website. By the way, it's centered on Oshkosh, Wisconsin, which I think is great. It's a sectional chart of an aviation chart, so it's kind of cool.
Yeah, the link will be in the show notes, but it's germericanpilots.wordpress.com. But the link will be in the show notes. All right, we want to thank you all for listening to the Airplane Geeks podcast. Our guest again was Betty Theske. You can find her at bettyinthesky.com. One of the pioneer aviation podcasters, and just a really great listen. The episodes are they're usually around half an hour, I would say, I guess. So they're a great listen. You can find show notes for this episode at airplanegeeks.com/518. And let's tell folks where they can find us online. David Vanderhoof, you're up first.
You can find me on Twitter at DM Vanderhoof, or you can find me like tonight sitting at my modeling bench while recording podcasts, building Legos. Check out our Instagram. Or you can find me on Friday mornings with that guy, Max Flight, talking about drones, which is what I built out of Legos tonight.
So what kind of a drone? I've seen some of the Lego kits. There aren't too many that are actually aircraft, but there are some. Was this a specific model drone?
I'll send you pictures in the show notes.
It's great.
Literally,
okay.
The Lego kit is called Drones. It's a little twin copter to go with the rest of my helicopters.
All right. And Max Trescott, where do folks find you?
Well, when I'm not in the cockpit, they can find me online at aviationnewstalk.com. And they can also find the Aviation News Talk podcast wherever podcasts are found.
And Brian
and
Coleman.
David, now that you have a Lego item, you could go to craftplicator.com and put it into, or the website will digitize it for you, and you could put it into Minecraft. So that's actually a project that I'm working on. And if people want to get a hold of me, if they're out at Chino this Saturday, please do so. Otherwise, send me an email at brian@airplanegeeks.com. And if you are planning on coming out to Chino this coming Saturday, send me an email so we will know how to get in touch with each other.
Great. So this is for putting objects into Minecraft?
Both.
I thought it was...
It'll put them into Minecraft, and it'll take, if you have a part of a world, it'll take it out of Minecraft. And you could either 3D print it, or you get very detailed instructions on how to build it with Lego bricks.
And what's that website again?
Craftplicator.com.
Cool.
I thought you would call it hokeypokey.com because you put your Lego in, you take your Lego out, you put your Micah, Lego in. I'm sorry.
How do folks reach you?
You can reach me on Twitter at MaineFly. That's Maine like the state, M-A-I-N-E, fly. And you can reach me via email at Micah, M-I-C-A-H, at airplanegeeks.com.
Cool. All right. You can find me at MaxFlight on Twitter. Look for me on LinkedIn. As David said, at the UAVDigest.com. If you can't remember that, just go to dronepodcast.com and it'll get you there. And also with Mary Kirby on PaxXPodcast.com. Our outro is by, I think we might play the full or most of the full Betty in the Sky the theme song for our outro. So you know where to find Betty. So please join us again next week as we talk aviation on the Airplane Geeks podcast. Bye, everybody.
Fly safely.
Good night.
Keep the loose side up.
And thanks for listening.
Hey, kids, let's travel the world together. She can make it easy and in any kind of weather. No TSA, no bag checks, no patting down. She's talking from the skies and sending lots of feel-good sounds. Oh, Betty in the sky, have you heard her yet? She loves traveling, there's no doubt. Betty and the Jets. Oh, she's weird and wonderful. Oh, Betty, she's a podcast queen. She's wearing high heel shoes, got her wings on too. You know I've never seen a better stew. Oh.
Hey, Betty, tell me about the suction cups. I mean, for turtles, I don't quite get that. Is that, I mean, is that real?
No, this is a true story. I know the girl, because sometimes some of the stories I hear, you wonder, like they've been told so many times that they don't get embellished. But I heard about the Herman story from her. It happened on her flight. And so I'm actually thinking, I don't know. I don't know how to do it yet, but I might do a children's book. A Herman the Suction Cup Turtle.
I went and searched, you know, turtle suction cups, and I'm trying to figure out how do you attach the darn thing.
They were booties. That's why, actually, I didn't tell the whole story because I figured it was too long for your podcast, but that's what the rest of the story is. So I told these other flight attendants, because you have the two cabins, so I was working up front, so there's four of us up there. So I was telling them about, the story of how there was this turtle with that suction cup booty. So the next day we had been in London, and we get in the van in the morning, and usually that's a quiet affair because it's like ridiculously early. And as soon as we got on the bus, the purser was like, I could not sleep last night because I was thinking about Herman, and I was thinking, you can't buy booties with suction cups for turtles. They don't sell those anywhere. So this woman had to make booties with suction cups the size for turtles, and how many times did poor Herman just slide down the window, you know? And then the other flight attendant was like, I was thinking about Herman too. And I was thinking, what happens when Herman has to go to the bathroom? Does he just pee down the window? So the other flight attendant was like, I was thinking about Herman too. And I was thinking, how does she get the little arms and legs out of the shell to put the booties with the suction cups on? Does she have to use tweezers? And so right then, the girl that had been in coach, who hadn't heard of any about this, she goes, what the hell are you people talking about? Suction cups and peeing down windows and tweezers and turtles.
That's funny. That's funny. Yeah, that's the one I thought about, too. It's like, well, how do you get the arms out to stick the little booties on?
Well, I was just, this girl was saying later, because I've been talking about Herman for months now, she was like, that lady was really stupid, because why didn't she just stick the suction cup on the bottom of his shell? He has a shell. Like, why? Why would you make booties with suction cups on them?
Well, that way you could turn them around easily, so, you know, you get different view from time to time.
Yeah. Yeah, and it wouldn't hurt the shell. He has a shell.
That's right. Just rotate him around. Yeah. Put a little swivel on it so you could spin him.
Yeah, like the cell phone car mounts.
It's a lazy Susan for my turtle.
The new turtle magnet mount.
Yeah.